It was not pleasant. It was like sensing someone standing right behind you and then feeling them take one step forward. Agnes would have pushed him away. That is, Agnes would have dithered and tried to talk her way out of things. But if push had come to shove, then she'd have pushed hard. But Perdita struck. And when her hand was halfway around, she turned it palm out and curled her fingers in to bring her nails into play. He caught her wrist, his hand moving in a blur. "Well done," he said, laughing. His other hand shot out and caught her other arm as it swung. "I like a woman with spirit." However, he had run out of hands, and Perdita still had a knee in reserve. Vlad's eyes crossed, and he made that small sound best recorded as "Magnificent," he croaked as he folded up. Perdita pulled herself away and ran over to Nanny Ogg, grabbing the woman's arm. "Nanny, we're leaving." "Are we, dear?" said Nanny calmly, not making a move. "And Jason and Darren too." Perdita didn't read as much as Agnes. She thought books were boring. But now she really needed to know. What did you use against vampires?
"Holy symbols," Agnes prompted from within.
Perdita looked around desperately. Nothing in the room looked particularly holy. Religion, apart from its use as a sort of cosmic registrar, had never caught on in Lancre.
"Daylight is always good, my dear," said the Countess, who must have caught the edge of her thought. "Your uncle always had big windows and easily twitched aside curtains, didn't he, Count?"
"Yes, indeed," said the Count.
"And when it came to running water, he always kept the moat flowing perfectly, didn't he?"
"Fed from a mountain stream, I think," said the Count.
"And for a vampire, he always seemed to have so many ornamental items around the castle that could be bent or broken into the shape of some religious symbol, as I recall."
"He certainly did. A vampire of the old school."
"Yes," the Countess gave her husband a smile. "The stupid school."
She turned to Perdita and looked her up and down.
"So I think you will find we are here to stay, my dear, although you do seem to have made an impression on my son. Come here, girl, let me have a good look at you."
Even cushioned inside her own head, Agnes felt the weight of the vampire's will hit Perdita like an iron bar, pushing her down. Like the other end of a seesaw, Agnes rose.
"Where's Magrat? What have you done with her?" she said.
"Putting the baby to bed, I believe," said the Countess, raising her eyebrows. "A lovely child."
"Granny Weatherwax is going to hear about this, and you'll wish you'd never been born, or unborn, or reborn, or whatever you are."
"We look forward to meeting her," said the Count calmly. "But here we are, and I don't seem to see this famous lady with us. Perhaps you should go and fetch her. You could take your friends. And when you see her, Miss Knit, you can tell her that there is no reason why witches and vampires should fight."
Nanny Ogg stirred. Jason shifted in his seat. Agnes pulled them upright and towards the stairs.
"We'll be back," she shouted.
The Count nodded.
"Good," he said. "We are famous for our hospitality."
It was still dark when Hodges Arg set out. If you were hunting a phoenix, he reasoned, the dark was probably the best time. Light showed up better in the darkness. He'd packed a portable wire cage, after considering the charred bars of the window, and he'd also spent some time on the glove. It was basically a puppet made of yellow cloth with some purple and blue rags tacked on. It was not, he conceded, very much like the drawing of the phoenix, but in his experience birds weren't choosy observers. Newly hatched birds were prepared to accept practically anything as their parent. Anyone who'd hatched eggs under a broody hen knew that ducklings could be made to think they were chicks, and poor William the Buzzard was a case in point. The fact that a young phoenix never saw its parent and therefore didn't know what it was supposed to look like might be a drawback in getting its trust, but this was unknown territory, and Hodges Arg was prepared to try anything. Like bait, for example. He'd packed meat and grain, although the drawing certainly suggested a hawk-like bird. But in case it needed to eat inflammable materials as well, he also put in a bag of mothballs and a pint of fish oil. Nets were out of the question, and bird lime was not to be thought of. Hodges Arg had his pride. Anyway, they probably wouldn't work. Since anything might be worth trying, he'd also adapted a duck lure, trying to achieve a sound described by a long-dead falconer as like unto the cry of a buzzard, yet of a lower pitch. He wasn't too happy about the result, but on the other hand, maybe a young phoenix didn't know what a phoenix was.